And welcome. It is Your Money. I'm Susie Jones. Happy to be with you and happy to have with us every week Bruce Helmer, the founder of Wealth Enhancement, and Peg Webb, Senior Vice President and Financial Advisor at Wealth Enhancement. Good day to both of you. Hope everybody's well, back in the saddle.
Good morning, Susie. Good morning, Bruce.
Hello, Peg Webb. Hello, Susie Jones. Ladies, it's good to be back with you. You were missed, and welcome back. Susie and Peg, as you know, and listeners, but listen frequently, as you may know, about three or four times a year, we like to take a look at markets. How are they doing? Where have they been? Why did they do what they did? And what do we think will happen going forward? Our clients get quarterly newsletters, and part of the newsletter is commentary on the markets. We call it Seven Market Movers. And Peg, we're very fortunate to have with us today Doug Huber. Doug is a Deputy Chief Investment Officer at Wealth Enhancement Group. He's one of the key people that makes the decisions, that manages our portfolios, that studies this stuff, looks at it, helps us all understand it. And we're going to have a conversation today with Doug and try to figure out what's going on. It's been very volatile to start the year. Peg, you probably have a lot of questions for Doug.
Well, I absolutely do. Doug doesn't know, but I took the last couple Sundays off. So I don't know if you guys talked about the volatility in the market, but it continues to happen. And I want to mention that Seven Market Movers that you mentioned, Bruce, is something that's actually online at wealthenhancement.com. And if you go to Insights and you hit blog, every week you can see there's either a video or something talking about the volatility in the markets. And our guest today, Doug, just did last week. So if you want to see what he looks like, you can go on there. And so welcome, Doug. Thank you for being here today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
So a couple questions. What we did, we put our heads together and we said, ooh, we've got this expert, you know, Doug, on the radio show. What should we ask him? So we've got a couple questions that we'd like to ask you. And then we absolutely want to get listeners involved because having Doug here, it is a special guest. And thank you for taking your time. So the first question we have is, so far this year, it's been very dramatic, and I don't mind drama, but this has actually been really dramatic, and there's just been so many big swings in the markets. So what would you say about that? Are we almost done with it, or is there more to come?
That's a great question. You know, I think at the heart of it, right, there's just been a lot of uncertainty plunged into kind of the economy with just this upsetting of 40 plus years of a global trade policy that's kind of being turned on its head and tariffs being introduced that we haven't seen for over 100 years. And so I think when this happens, you know, the market participants always try to harken back to some playbook that they've seen before. And I think, unfortunately, like most periods of volatility, you know, the last playbook doesn't typically work. And so, you know, this has certainly been a pretty dramatic move in sentiment from investors. You can look, I think, you know, investor sentiment has cratered to levels that, you know, we haven't even seen in the great financial crisis, which to me is surprising given that we came into this with such a strong economy. We've had really strong markets. For sentiment to turn that fast was pretty remarkable. And often with that, you know, market prices follow. I think I like to study the structure of markets a lot, and structures have changed as we've modernized the system, right? And so I think oftentimes these short-term price movements that you see are not our clients, you know, selling out of their positions, right? It's oftentimes driven by more, you know, short-term participants, highly leveraged traders, hedge funds, macro traders, quantitative or algorithmic strategies that, you know, there's nothing wrong with them, but their outlook is not trying to build portfolios for, you know, a long-term plan. It's not to try to meet objectives, right? It's to try to make money in very short periods of time. They have to report to clients monthly or quarterly, right? And so they're trying to clip pennies very frequently. But they have a lot of money in play at any given point in time, and they don't usually sit around to find out, right? They just say, listen, this is getting too volatile. They have signals that tell them to sell. And so they're typically the ones that really are moving the market so dramatically. It's not, you know, the everyday investor just, you know, trying to get out and get back in, right? I think, you know, so oftentimes it's important to remember that it's not everybody running for the hills, right? A lot of the volume is driven by, you know, a small number of participants that have a big piece of that wallet share. The other thing I'd say is their focus, like I mentioned, is more on that price momentum, right? It's not on that long-term value. And I think that concept of long-term, I think about this a lot. It's one of what I would consider the last arbitrages, and I don't like to use kind of industry lingo, but you know, it's one of those areas that if you take long-term horizon, you usually can kind of accrete something to fair value, whether that's a bond you own comes to maturity, or a stock has delivered you know, dividends and earnings, and the fair value of that stock goes to where it should be, right? You know, I think that's the one kind of thing that we have to give to our clients is to be long-term. That is, I think, how money is really, how wealth is really created. And so, you know, it's important that we stay invested. The other thing I'd say is, listen, all of this noise has given way to us to pay a lot of attention to what is the impact of it, right? Markets, they certainly are short-term pricing mechanisms, but they're often pricing in a future expectation. And I think, you know, what we're seeing is there's a lot of uncertainty around what comes from this, right? Do tariffs bring in slower growth? Do they bring in rising inflation? And so it's going to be important to figure out kind of where the economy heads from here. And I think there's just nobody knows, right? It seems like every day is a new headline. And with that, the market tries to reprice very rapidly. It will be important to pay attention to our fiscal policies. It'll be important to pay attention to central bank's monetary policy, because they're trying to balance a dual mandate of inflation and employment. And on one hand, they might be facing a little bit of an uphill battle if these tariffs kind of bring in a little bit of more sticky inflation. On the flip side, if growth starts to slow, right, there's more than likely unemployment starts to creep up a little bit. And so, you know, they're left kind of juggling, hey, do we cut rates? Do we not cut rates? And so it's important to kind of keep an eye on the metrics and data they're looking at to try to figure out, you know, what direction are they heading.
I think, you know, one of the things I wanted to bring up that you brought up early in this question about, you know, what's going on is for decades now, I've always said we need two separate stock markets. We need a stock market for our retail, you know, all of our friends, all of our clients that are relying on us long term. And then you just mentioned like hedge funds and all these short positions or long positions. And that's, I had to remind people that is what's happening right now, because they've actually made some trades that if they don't get out, you know, they're going to lose a lot. They've got, you know, these puts and calls and all these things. So I just wanted to see what you would think about, hey, why don't we have two different markets? And that way our clients don't have to have such volatility like that. I know that's probably not even possible. Bruce, you wanted to ask something.
Well, I just, Doug, your answer to Peg's question, which was outstanding, by the way, it reminds me of a question that I'm getting from clients that I don't really have a good answer to, but let me give the question some context before I ask the question. I think many people would agree, and I've read about this a lot, that the president has identified a legitimate issue that maybe our trade policy is disadvantageous to us. Maybe the U.S. has been getting the short end of the stick, but a lot of these same economists then say, but just massive, you know, across the board tariffs on everybody is not exactly the appropriate way to address this issue. So the question that I get from people that I don't know how to answer, maybe you have some insights, Doug, is what exactly is the president trying to accomplish here? What is the end game? Because we all know that a lot of our market volatility has been driven by these tariffs and these trade policy changes that he wants.
You asked what I might argue is the $100 billion question, right? I mean, I think if if one was lucky enough to be kind of inside the thinking machine of this administration, it would be a fruitful place to be. I think, you know, if we take a step back and look at it, and I don't disagree, I think, you know, high level, right, there are certainly merits to, you know, the concept of what is going on. Oftentimes when you try to shift something so dramatically, or at least, you know, at least with the drama that has been presented thus far, you know, that comes with a lot of turmoil. But what I think here is, if you look at this administration, you know, there's a couple things we pull on. Now, how right they are, you know, only time will tell, but it's certainly an administration that ran on a strong economy, right? I mean, that this is something President Trump has been, you know, very vocal about, is, you know, under his first term, how strong the stock market was, how strong the economy was. You know, he certainly went after his opponent on kind of inflation and other economic issues during the presidential race. And so, you know, you have to believe that at the end of the day, his outcome is certainly not to try to sink the economy. And I think we have to keep that in mind. The flip side is this is a president that is very much about the art of the deal. We know this, right? There's a book he wrote, you know, and so I do think he's balancing somewhere between trying to be a hard line and, you know, really drive negotiation with, you know, balancing what's going on, what's the market and participants trying to tell him. And I think he probably is frustrated that the market isn't giving him the leash he would like. I think he'd feel like he probably would be in a better position to negotiate if he could keep his very hard stance on these trading partners. But obviously the market is growing very concerned. I've seen some kind of oddities amongst asset classes, and I think he saw that and has had to soften his stance on that. You know, we'll talk about it, I think, a little bit later in terms of how we think about scenarios and kind of where this could go. But, you know, I think if you gave me, if I had to handicap a base case, I do think that, you know, in all honesty, ultimately there will be negotiations. I don't think this blanket tariff, you know, is the right thing. I don't think that's actually what will come to fruition. We've already seen numerous pauses, starts and stops. So, you know, I do believe that they want everybody to come to the table and come to some solution that, you know, potentially puts us on a better foot, you know, vis-a-vis where we've been. But, you know, it's really hard to handicap exactly what the driving forces are from the administration. But that would kind of where my baseline sits.
So with your 29 people that you have at Wealth Enhancement Group in, you know, making decisions on behalf of all our clients, is there something that you're actually doing right now, or is it kind of a hold in the percentage of U.S. that you have versus international? Just talk a little bit, maybe from a high level, what is the team doing?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, to just take a step back and take the highest philosophical approach here, you know, I think we are firm believers for our clients that it's time in the markets, not timing the markets, right? It, you know, it's having a long-term view. And how we manage portfolios is not to be like one of the hedge funds or quantitative traders out there. We're not trying to make moves on a daily basis to, you know, what sometimes can be colloquially referred to as picking up pennies in front of a steamroller, right? It's really kind of taking that long-term view. We're very strategic in how we build these portfolios, but we're not blind. We certainly don't want to stick our heads in the sand as it relates to what's going on in the market or the economy, right? And so we are always kind of digesting data. We're always looking at, hey, is there a risk here that we want to kind of fade away from? Or is there an opportunity that's arising that we might want to lean into? But I would say that those moves are typically, you know, on the margin, right? It's, you know, slightly repositioning risk here or there. To get to your actual question, I think coming into the year, having no foresight that, you know, we would enter kind of this period of volatility, how, you know, the sweeping tariff policy that's been enacted, you know, I just think we thought, hey, you know, if you look at the economy, we're in a relatively good place. I think we thought the U.S. was a stronger economy than our international counterparts. And we've always had what we call a little bit of a home country bias, meaning, you know, we are a little bit more overweight to the United States than maybe a global benchmark would be, again, on the margin. That being said, though, I think entering the year, we saw some of signs emerging that maybe, you know, we weren't going to be accelerating at quite the pace we had historically. And so we had kind of already repositioned our portfolios at the beginning of the year, late last year, to be a little bit more defensive. What that meant was maybe, you know, small cap, you know, investments were interesting, smaller companies. You know, they tend to be more volatile. Sometimes they can tend to be lower quality in nature just because they, you know, they don't have the balance sheet of a Google or Meta, or, you know. And so we purposely kind of high graded that exposure, kind of leaned a little bit more quality in our small cap exposure. We went up a little bit in market cap to kind of take advantage more of what we call the mid cap stocks. On our large cap U.S. exposure, we went a little bit higher into higher quality names. And so, you know, I think we just kind of positioned to be slightly more defensive going into the year. And that has certainly been a benefit. You know, I think a lot of things have changed this year. You know, for the first time in a long time, international markets are outperforming U.S. markets. And I think that's interesting because I don't think their economies got dramatically more, dramatically better through this. If anything, you could probably argue that they might be worse off at the end of the day. But investors are seeking international stocks, and they have done better than U.S. stocks. So it's important that we maintain that diversification, and we did not get rid of that. And so, yeah, I think, you know, we're certainly looking at what the future might hold here. I think, you know, we've run the variety of scenarios of where we think the economy could go, and do not have a crystal ball. No one does. And like I mentioned before, you know, this concept of having a playbook, you know, from the past, we don't really have one. And so what do we lean into? Well, we lean into what we know, and that the economy, you know, primarily is driven by growth and inflation. And so we've mapped out a variety of scenarios. And what I can tell you, and we can get into this in a little more detail, is the end, you know, the kind of the medium and long term, there's a lot of variability to where those scenarios go. But in the kind of shorter term, you know, call it the next quarter or two, almost every scenario kind of has the same move. And I think that is one that is towards a bit of a slowing growth. I think that is very well telegraphed at this point. We can see it in some of the data that's coming out that, you know, businesses aren't making strategic decisions. They're kind of sitting on their hands. Hiring has slowed down. Job openings have decreased. The consumer is certainly, I think, in the short term, kind of pulled forward a lot of their purchases, kind of in anticipation of prices rising in the short and medium term. But I think, you know, considerably going to kind of slow purchases from here. And so we do believe that the economy is slowing and will likely show that over the next quarter or two. But where it goes from there, you know, that's what we're really trying to ascertain now. And we're thinking about, you know, what are the next moves we need to make?
Bruce?
If you joined us late, listeners, we're fortunate to have with us a Deputy Chief Investment Officer at Wealth Enhancement Group, Doug Huber. We were talking about markets, where they've been, where we think we're going. Doug and Peg, we've got a little less than 3 minutes left in this segment. Peg, another question or a key takeaway in the second half, we'll definitely get listeners involved. Anything else, Peg, you think we should hit on?
Well, Doug, you had a kind of a couple closing thoughts. I mean, you just talked to us about kind of the higher level, what you're doing, what you've done, that kind of thing. But how about going forward? Any closing thoughts? And then we'd love to get listeners involved.
Yeah, absolutely. I think right now the biggest kind of point that we're trying to talk with our advisors and our clients about is that we just don't want to confuse short-term noise with kind of long-term economic trends. And I think we touched on it right out of the gate. You know, I think there's a difference between, you know, market participants that are very short-term in nature and those that, you know, are building investment programs for the long term. They're building programs to support, you know, objectives, right? Whether that's retirement, philanthropy, generational giving, whatever that may be, you know, those are long-term objectives that our clients are running at, and that shouldn't be confused with short-term noise. That doesn't mean these periods of volatility are comfortable. Nobody likes when they look at their portfolio of investments and they're sharply down on any given day, week, month, quarter, whatever it may be. And so, you know, I think, you know, we just are trying to communicate that oftentimes periods of volatility, you know, they're short in nature if you look at the relative kind of history, but they're not comfortable while you're in. And that being said, I think oftentimes, you know, sharp drawdowns are typically followed by, you know, relatively, you know, quick snaps following that in the positive direction. And I think it's important to understand that, you know, just being out of, I think there's some great research that's been done. I think just being out of the market for the five best days kind of over any given period can really cost, you know, 25-30% of like kind of long-term compounded returns when you think about it. And so it's important to stay invested. You know, obviously, if we thought that there was, you know, a real, you know, issue coming at us, we would certainly recommend some course of action. And we're certainly doing things in the background to reposition portfolios. But I think it's important that we keep in mind that we're, you know, we're for the long term and stay invested.
All right. I think that's my cue. 651-461-9226. 651-461-9226. Please text or call with your questions. We've got a great guest taking your calls at 651-461-9226. It is Your Money. Welcome to the second half. My name is Susie Jones. Once again, here is Bruce Helmer, the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group and financial advisor, as well as Peg Webb, senior vice president and financial advisor, along with a very special guest today talking about investments right now. Doug Huber is the special guest. He is the deputy chief investment officer at Wealth Enhancement. Welcome back to all three of you. I want to make people aware that they have this half of the show to ask questions at 651-461-9226. Bruce, do you want to recap before we take a question or so?
Thank you, Susie Jones. Yeah, just really quickly, if you joined us late, Susie mentioned Doug Huber. Doug is one of the guys at Wealth Enhancement Group and our team of investment management people that run our portfolios, that research markets around the globe, that try to make decisions to enhance returns, reduce our risk. And we periodically like to have somebody from that team come and speak to the world about what they see, what's happened, why it happened, what they think is going to happen going forward. A couple things maybe that we still want to hit on, but most of this half of the show, listeners, you can drive where we go with your questions. Peg, I know there's a couple things you wanted to hit on, and Doug, I think you did too.
Yeah, the only thing I wanted to highlight is just the hands-on approach of kind of watching the markets, looking at trends. You know, it's times like this, which Bruce, you and I have gone through decades of different dramatic time periods in assisting our clients. But this one, we get the comments, but this one's different, right? So as Doug was talking and talking about, you know, what we're doing for clients and how this is pretty dramatic because we haven't had someone challenge all these tariffs. And there's been kind of an education process for us explaining what tariffs are to clients because it really and truly wasn't part of our conversations that we had when we were building portfolios. So thanks, Doug, for bringing all that up and making it aware, making everyone aware of here's where we sit today. There's a lot of volatility. I loved last week where we grew back some. But I would say for the most part, our clients are long-term investors and they appreciate the tweaks that you make. Other things that we could share with the listeners as kind of a close, and then I understand we already have questions in the queue.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think it's often important to, when we have this much uncertainty going on, you know, how do you get prepared? How do you talk about these things? I think communication is vital during these periods of volatility. I think first and foremost, you know, I know we do it, and I think it's important that investors think about it. You know, what are the possible scenarios? And I could paint, you know, kind of three high-level scenarios that I think are worth thinking about. I think, you know, let's call it the worst case scenario, right? We have a very prolonged trade war. This drags out for years and years. The economy slows a lot. What does that mean? And I'm not ascribing a high probability to that scenario. I think the base case scenario would be more like, yes, we know there's going to be impacts from this initial kind of shock of tariffs, but, you know, clearer heads will prevail and you know, there will be negotiations. We'll get ourselves into a place where there's less uncertainty. There's more clarity around the future state and the market and sentiment will kind of come back on that. People can spend less time focusing on tariffs and more time focusing on maybe some of the positives of the administration, like deregulation, potential tax cuts, other things like that. And then I think the third scenario would be kind of the pie in the sky, the best case scenario. And that's simply that, you know, this gets resolved very rapidly. This was, you know, a lot of safe rattling and less, impact to it. And we go back to the place we were when we started the year, which was in a place of a really good economy, a really strong consumer, really good corporate balance sheets. You know, I think it's important to kind of think about those and ascribe your own probabilities to kind of where you think that's going. I think key point, diversification still works. You know, it's been very clear this year. I think bonds, for the most part, have done what bonds should do. They've been a good, counterpunch to the equity market volatility, not in very short-term periods, right? Day-to-day things change, but year-to-date, bonds have certainly held up very well. I think I looked just at the end of last week, you know, a 60-40 portfolio, which I know, you know, everybody kind of talks about 60% equities, 40% bonds. You know, a very simple portfolio of that, I think, is only down, you know, 1.5-2% year to date. So, you know, despite all the noise, you know, it hasn't been the worst if you look at kind of the endpoint, at least of where we sit today. I think it's always important, you know, with that in mind, to revisit your asset allocation, right? I'm not suggesting people shift dramatically, but oftentimes when portfolios get tested, your risk tolerance gets tested and you kind of really figure out, hey, maybe I'm not as risk-taking as I thought I was. Maybe I do want to be a shade more conservative, and it's important to think about that. I think it's always good to have a little bit of liquidity, have some cash reserves, right? If A, maybe just to keep nerves calm, but B, I think it's always, you know, in periods of volatility, oftentimes opportunities present themselves, and we want to take advantage of those. If you have some what we call dry powder or cash on sidelines, you can kind of put that to work at maybe, you know, better valuations in equity markets or higher spreads in credit where you're getting paid more. And then I think finally it all comes down to just being disciplined. You know, I know for our portfolios, we're really disciplined about rebalancing, taking advantage of volatility and maybe harvest some tax losses or other things. And so, you know, I think if you look at that as kind of the broad playbook, that's a lot of the times what we like to communicate as we think about kind of, you know, making our way through these bouts of uncertainty, these bouts of volatility, getting to the other side.
Doug, I love everything you said, but what really hit and struck a chord with me that I really like, you said, when your portfolio gets tested, your risk tolerance might get tested. That is so smart, so brilliant. And that's what we got to talk to clients about. So listeners, let's take advantage of his expertise, Doug Huber, Deputy Chief Investment Officer at Wealth Enhancement Group. Susie, let's let listeners get as many questions in for Doug as they can the rest of the way.
All right, 651-461-9226. You can either text or call and get your question answered. The first question is, with the market being down, is it a good time to max out a Roth IRA for the 2025 year?
You know, I can certainly speak to the market piece of it. I'll probably defer to Peg or Bruce on more of the maxing out the Roth piece of it. But, yeah, I think, you know, if you just look at the markets holistically, you know, obviously they are probably more attractive from an entry point in terms of valuations than they were, you know, just a quarter ago. The flip side is that is for a reason, right? That is because there's uncertainty. But I think, you know, it certainly is a good time to think about, you know, if you have dry powder or you're looking to get invested, you know, starting to dabble your way in, you know, this is probably a better time than maybe it was, you know, just a short time ago.
All right.
I absolutely agree. I think when you have a volatile time like this, fund, you know, your 2025 IRA. I mean, there's no reason not to. Also, I've coached people that they should go in their 401k if they're, you know, dollar cost averaging over the year. Maybe you take advantage of being able to pre-fund, you know, some of that 401k and not necessarily dollar cost average in. If you feel like the market is down and you have a long term anyway, it's just a couple tips for people that may just sit around and do nothing. But I like the idea of going aggressive and just getting money in, even because it's long term anyway. Susie,
really quickly, I'm sorry, I got to jump in too, and I've talked about this on the show. Personally, we fund my wife Pamela's IRA. We're not eligible for Roth IRA, but Pamela can contribute to a traditional IRA. We usually do it like for 2024 when we're getting ready to file our taxes in the spring of 25. And we did that, but because of the market retraction, we've already funded her for 2025. And I told anyone that will listen to me, look, I don't know where the market's going to go for sure, but I know where it's been. And we're getting in now at more than 10% lower than what it was. To me, it's on sale. We're buying at a discount. So we've already funded her 2025, which normally we don't do. So to the texter's question, I certainly think it's a good idea, and we did it ourselves. Susie?
All right, 651-461-9226. If you have a question for any of them, Peg, Bruce, or our special guest today, Mr. Hubert, let's take the next question. Texter writes, they say to diversify internationally. With that being said, will tariffs affect how we view international investments?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I think, you know, it's important to think about, we often talk about international investing from this concept of domicile, right? Where is a company listed on an exchange, right? And so, you know, oftentimes it's you buy stocks listed in the UK or Germany or Japan or emerging markets like China or Brazil, you know, but we actually spend more time thinking about, you know, where are the revenues being generated underlying a portfolio? And it's interesting, if you look at the S&P 500, you know, a U.S. large cap, you know, index, 40% of the revenues come from outside the United States. So you could make an argument that you're very exposed internationally, even with kind of U.S. stocks, right? So all of these large stocks are very global in nature, and that's no different if you're listed here in the United States or in the U.K. or in Germany or wherever it may be. And so, you know, I think it's important to think about, you know, where you're exposed to in terms of the economies you're exposed to, less so of where a stock might be listed. And so, I obviously stocks listed, traded on other exchanges outside the U.S., what we call international stocks, have certainly done better year to date. And I think there's a lot of good companies that might be headquartered abroad. So I do think it's, you know, important to have that exposure. But, you know, more so we like to go under the hood and say, okay, what economies are we actually exposed to? The end kind of buyer, you know, if Apple sells 50% of their iPhones in China, well, guess what? 50% of Apple's revenue is tied to how is the Chinese consumer doing, not how is the U.S. consumer doing, right? And so it's important to keep those kind of thoughts in mind of when you're kind of, if you look at your portfolio, don't just look at where a company's listed. Look at, you know, think about, all right, well, where are you doing business? And are those areas I want to be exposed to?
Peg or Bruce, do you want to jump in?
I think that's a great answer. I don't have anything to add.
Bruce? No?
No, I'm good. That was excellent.
All right, let's get another one in. 651-461-9226. The texter writes, thank you for today's topic and Doug's expertise. Are we at a point where the 3 to 5% market moves are considered to be the new norm? Or do you feel this is just a blip? And I think you addressed this a little bit, Doug, a short bit ago, but maybe kind of readdress that.
Sure. You know, the definition of blip could be a little bit up to interpretation, I think. I certainly would be in the camp that, you know, barring a headline on tomorrow morning saying, you know, yep, just kidding, we're not doing anything. You know, volatility is really kind of going to be here to stay, at least in the shorter term, because the market is just trying to find some footing as to, you know, where are we going, right? And what are the impacts going to be longer term, right? The market is always pricing in the future or what they anticipate the future being. And when you don't have that, you know, clear view of that, you know, things get a little muddy and volatility spikes up. And I expect that to be the case until we get clarity, right? And so as trade negotiations go on, frankly, even as a plan to do trade negotiations emerge, right? We've already heard, you know, there were some rumblings late last week that there was going to be this kind of very well laid plan of, you know, eight countries come in and negotiate, then another eight, then another eight. You know, I think just even having some clarity of how we're going to go about this gives the market some confidence. And never mind when we actually get to the actually kind of getting these trade negotiations done. And so our belief would be that, you know, volatility is here to stay for some time, but will likely kind of creep itself back down as some clarity emerges.
Can I jump in? This next question is good for all of us. Good morning. Can you quickly explain tariffs? What are they? And have we been taken advantage of? Or what is a tariff? I mean, I think that's a good basic for all of us.
Yeah, sure thing. I mean, at the highest level, a tariff is simply a tax that is imposed on goods that are imported from another country. And so, you know, this is our way of kind of this administration looking back, and historically, you know, we get tariffed from other countries at a higher degree than we give tariffs to those where we kind of export our goods to. And so, you know, it's an attempt to kind of right that quote unquote wrong. And I don't want to get too much into, you know, the philosophy of where that is. You know, it's hard to say, but I do think, you know, mathematically, we get tariffed more than we tariff others. And that has been the case for 40 plus years. I think the history of it essentially was that, hey, we will push manufacturing offshore. And in turn, we buy goods from you, but you need to buy our government debt. I mean, at a very high level, that has been the trade policy for 40 years, right? We will issue debt to fund this, but you need to be the net buyer of it. And in turn, we'll give you all the manufacturing. And that was kind of this idea of globalization, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s. You know, we're now flipping that on its head a bit. And that is, you know, it's not going to be comfortable. It's just depending on, hey, is this more on the margin to try to get things a little more balanced, or are you going to go, you know, with the nuclear option and really, you know, really try to get to a point where maybe we're on the winning side of this equation?
Bruce or Peg?
Go ahead.
Bruce?
What I was going to say is, what's interesting, Doug, is that maybe it would have been better, instead of waiting decades of time, that they had made a date, let's say 5 years from now, we'll renegotiate or we'll talk about it, right? They've just left it grow and grow to where it is. And our globalization has changed so dramatically. We can't go back and do that, but that would be kind of a suggestion even maybe for going forward. Bruce?
Well, I was just going to say, you know, again, this is very, very complicated, and I appreciate the listener texting, you know, what is a tariff? And maybe we should have addressed that to the simplest form, you know, to go into this discussion. But then the ripple effects, I think, of, you know, part of the goal, I think, is to bring manufacturing back to create jobs again in this country. But one of the challenges to that is that U.S. citizens can't make a living on wages that, you know, people in India. So part of the reason these jobs got outsourced and manufacturing went to other countries is you don't have to pay workers as much as you'd have to pay American workers. So it's really, really complicated, and there's multiple ripple effects, but that's the first one that jumped into my mind. Doug, I don't know if you want to speak to that or not. We've got about 3.5 minutes left in the show.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be quick because I know we want to take a couple more questions in the few minutes we have left, but I totally agree. I mean, I think you bring up a great point, right? That was a big piece of that equation is You get cheaper labor abroad. You know, overall, it brings the cost of goods down. You know, that mindset has shifted. I think this administration is very much about bringing back kind of that America first attitude, bringing back manufacturing jobs and other jobs here to the U.S. But the point you make is very good in that whether it's caused by tariffs or just the fact that generally is going to cost more money to do, you know, that leaves a pretty, you know, it leaves you in a place where you have to believe that prices might, you know, stay higher longer.
Should we get another one in? 651-461-9226. A texter writes, I'm 72, be 73 in October. What is the maximum I could put into a Roth? And would that be a good idea to put into a Roth for my 401 Vanguard account? Paul? Bruce?
Peg?
Doug?
Well, as we talked earlier, I would take advantage of this volatility. Absolutely. Now, you are going to enter into 73, but you know what? You're going to live 25 more years. And so that money is going to continue to grow. I think with modern medicine and all the changes that we've had for longevity, you know, you should think that way as a 73-year-old. Bruce?
Yeah, and how much you can put in, if you're over the age of 50, you have a so-called catch-up provision where you can do an extra $1,000. So I think it's, what is it this year, Peg? 70, is it 7,000 or 75? I think it's 7,000 for if you're under 50, $1,000 catch-up. I think it's 8,000. And but if you're 70-some, to be able to contribute, you also have to have earned income. So you can't contribute to a traditional IRA or a Roth IRA unless you or your partner has earned income, and you can't contribute more than what you earned. So in other words, if you have a part-time job that paid you $5,000, you can't put $8,000 into a Roth. You can only put in up to five, up to what you earned. So how much you can put in is partly a function of age, partly a function of your income. But whatever you're eligible to do, I agree with Peg, it's a good time to do it. And Susie, I know we're down to about a minute, so I just want to take time to, again, thank Doug Huber for his time and his expertise and being on the show today. Doug, I know you're a busy guy these days. We appreciate you.
Well, and
thanks
also
for having me on. This is great.
Yeah, well, go to wealthenhancement.com. We have videos on there under Insights, and it's weekly, 7 market movers, and Doug is a frequent presenter. I like watching videos versus having to read an entire article, so check that out.
All right, again, wealthenhancement.com. Now, if you did not get your question answered today, you can call this number, 1-888-6-ADVICE, 1-888-6-ADVICE, and someone will get back to you, or you can email questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. Make it a great week.